For July the 18th, 2025, we talk about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4, Chorus of Carcosa, The Alters, and much more. Welcome to Level 550. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. Thanks for understanding us taking last week off. Needed to catch up on things. Welcome back, everybody. It feels like it's been forever since I've talked to Ben. Hi, Ben.
Yeah.
Who are you again?
I can't remember how many weeks I've been off. So it feels like a while for me too, but I was moving houses. So I am just very happy that as of today, I have a computer set up with both monitors set up and I'm good to go. So,
hey. Yeah. Got to get the mission critical stuff up.
Yeah. But yeah, double win. Both my personal and professional life are improved. So
awesome. Yeah. You've been really busy, actually.
I went on a little voyage. I went back to visit family in Ohio around the 4th of July.
No. You only say that if you dropped acid.
Wait.
I went on a little voyage.
Oh, got it.
That's actually the only reason someone goes back to Ohio is they dropped acid.
Yeah, you just end up there on accident.
I was gonna say the choose life signs in my parents' neighborhoods were pretty solemn, so did not feel much like a trip in that sense. But no. But anyway, that aside, that was nice to see. We have a new niece who was born a couple months ago, so that was cool to see. And then went to a wedding in DC last weekend. That was fun as well. And I got to see Moxie in real life, so that was sweet.
Yeah.
Had a lot of in-person meetings because saw Moxie this past week as well, and Dennis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to have to go out and visit Jala.
Yeah.
There we go.
You know, just complete the rounds.
Yeah. When are we going to do a Duck Con and get us all in the same place at the same time?
I'm telling you, Duck Con Seattle.
Duck Fest. Gary and I are always talking about it. Nothing official or anything. A lot of it depends on if I move or not.
Can you dish about that?
I mean, Ohio is a pit, and I don't think I want to be here for much longer.
No. The pit is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right. No, it's the actual pit where they're trying to legislate me out of existence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just something I'm thinking about. But it makes it a little bit hard to think of plans. I don't know. It would be fun for all of us to be in the same place.
I agree.
You have anything past few weeks?
I'm sure I have stuff that I cannot remember, so we're going to go with no.
Okay. Dennis, I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I was going to say we proved this past weekend that we don't need a convention to hang out, at least the hosts, right?
Right.
Just go see each other. And yeah. That worked out pretty well.
It's just it's tough to coordinate. Let's see. Moxie, how about you?
As was said, got to see all you guys, which was epic. Also got to see the fireworks on the National Mall, which was really cool.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, where some really, really cool fireworks, like had some that spelled out USA and stuff like that. It was just, you know, a good time. Let's see. Oh, actually, so after seeing Ben this last weekend, went the Smithsonian's like Asian and Pacific Islander I don't know what the term is, like kind of their historical division had a talk that was History of Martial Arts in Washington, D.C. Like a bunch of older, like mostly like 60 to 80 year old like martial arts masters from the city, just kind of telling stories about their experiences and, like, you know, such that, you know, enough age between them and their instructors that, like, some of their instructors were like, oh, yeah, this is the first person to bring Taekwondo to Washington, D.C., or, like, this was someone who, like, you know, experienced, like, living in, or, you know, family living in the internment camps, or, you know, this is someone who was like, fuck you to segregation. So just, you know, tons of cool stories. I think one of the most evocative was kind of a story they wouldn't tell.
Okay.
One of their, one of the instructors, or, well, one of the instructors they're telling stories about, he's since, you know, he's passed away, but apparently taught a bunch of the, like, now prominent politicians as when they were kids, so, like, including Joe Biden and Jesse Jackson.
Okay.
And the story they would not tell is apparently at one of the tournaments, there was, like, a fabled matchup between some prominent Republican and a prominent Democrat, but they wouldn't say who it was or who won.
Oh. Huh.
But yeah, no. So, you know, just really, really cool experience. Yeah. So that was
no, the Democrat would have kind of, you know, just said, ah, man, I'll start punching myself just so you don't have to.
I mean, that does sound about part
as it lines up, right, doesn't now. It? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah. They would actively move someone who supported them in front of them. Mm-hmm. Say, this person will take punches for me.
Yeah.
I mean, they are, in like the last week or so, have grown at least one backbone. So that's been nice.
Yeah. But yeah,
a vertebrae, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. That'll dissolve like dissolve like cotton candy. Don't worry. Nice. Well, that sounds like a bunch of cool talks.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've been having some fun this week getting into Dungeon Crawler Carl. So on Jen's recommendation, started checking out these books. Has anyone read these or listened to these before?
I have not.
No.
Okay. No. My pitch is that it is The Hunger Games meets Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay.
I like half of those things.
Well, yeah, it is basically at a high level, Earth is taken over by aliens, with the Hitchhiker-esque line of like, well, you had your chance to protest and you didn't. So Earth is ours now, and turned into a massive worldwide MMO style dungeon. And humans are given the choice to either stay on the surface and kind of fend for themselves or progress into the dungeon to explore its, you know, treasures and et cetera. And this kind of everyman Carl, is outside at 2 a.m. when this happens, chasing his ex-girlfriend's cat, mm-hmm. trying to get it back inside, and randomly goes into, the dungeon just because he's going to freeze to death otherwise. And it's all about his hijinks progressing through. It is effectively as if The Hunger Games was run as an MMO, complete with loot boxes and character classes that everyone can choose.
Okay.
Very silly, very funny. And, it's one of those things where Jen had been telling me about it for a while. And she's like, I know there are references in here that I'm not getting that you will.
Okay.
And I, even knowing I'm missing references, really like this. So I think it's right up your alley. And she was right.
Oh,
so, you know, some character classes that get talked about are, things like monster truck driver.
Okay.
Nice.
Child actress. And the like, artist alley mogul is another one that you could choose.
Sounds like Earth.
I feel yep. like monster truck driver would not be very useful in a dungeon.
You would think, but remember, this is a worldwide dungeon going on. So lots of room for vehicles in there, even if it is technically underground.
So it's like the truck.
Ooh,
it's the ooh, blame like the blame approach to dungeons.
Yes. but yeah, so if you've ever, you know, if it sounds at all interesting to parse out what skills would go into a monster truck driver as a class, and hearing how someone might leverage those, like it's got that level of nerdiness in everything where it's like, oh, you know, my, so because he's out there in the middle of the night, he doesn't have any pants, and circumstances conspire. This is all being streamed a la, the worst possible Twitch/Hunger Games type of deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, circumstances so regular conspire streaming. That, yes. you know, it gets to be a thing that he doesn't have, pants or shoes. Oh. And you know, that gets reinforced. So he winds up, with unarmed combat as a thing and explosives. Whereas his cat, that's right. The cat becomes sentient through, a series of events.
Okay.
Even more so than a normal cat, I guess. And she becomes like a caster summoner type of character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of like outsized characters and you know, comedic situations very similar to what you'd find in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, along with the kind of like, oh, there's, you know, there's corporate machinations going on behind the scenes of this game, and like the very prescient, the AI that it runs it, because to do a worldwide dungeon, you can't possibly like create all that content through a human, has its own nefarious purposes that seem to be bubbling up here mm-hmm. and there. So yeah, highly recommend. It was a self-published book, I guess. And then Audible bought the rights for streaming, and it's become one of their most popular series. Yeah. So check out Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Yeah, the monster truck driver class is really overpowered. So to balance it, he only gets his powers on 3 days of the week: Sunday, Sunday, and Sunday.
This is the kind of content that's in there.
Like, okay,
you I know you will now appreciate it.
Yeah, that understood is the exact the kind of stuff
that's in there. Yes, exactly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's me.
Cool. I've mostly just been working and doing stuff around. Like the biggest thing was having Dennis and Moxie over just for a night of hanging out. You know. Just mm-hmm. that was fun. We just had pizza. That's and awesome. Talked. So yeah, it was like the first time I've really like had people over to my house, really, in like the 7 years I've lived in it and something there. Like I've had, you know, family, odd family members over, you know, once or twice or like, but like a lot of that's been for like, you know, outdoor stuff, you know, sitting in the backyard for 4th of July stuff. So it was neat, entertaining.
Yeah. That's you awesome. Are a gracious host and I had a great time.
Yeah. It was good. But yeah, I've got nothing else. I think that we should talk about video games then.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I do, although I've not gotten super far in it.
Okay.
So Game Pass released Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3+4.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure is just Tony Hawk Pro Skater 7.
It is expressed as an equation, so yes. Although I think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 7 is American Wasteland. So this is something that I have been playing as well. So we we can tag team off of yours into mine.
Yeah. You probably have much more to say about it because, basically my experience with it is, so far has been struggling through the tutorials and, creating a character.
Mm-hmm.
So, the tutorials have taught me that I am approximately as bad of a virtual skater as I am a real life skater.
Okay.
I definitely spend most of the time just like running into walls and shit.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of tutorials too. I almost wonder if you would be better off like picking up one of the older ones before you get into like all the different connecting moves.
I could see that. I basically went through the tutorials until I got to grinding, because I figured that then gave me most of like the movement powers. Mm-hmm. And so I figured that was probably enough to kind of, work my way through it a little bit, and then I can always come back, once I've played for a bit.
Mm-hmm. So had you played much or any Tony Hawk before, or is this like your first encounter with it just because it was on Game Pass?
Yeah, I think this is completely my first encounter. I remember watching Dennis play, I think both one of the Tony Hawks and maybe Skate in college when we were rooming together.
Yeah, that sounds right. It would have been one of the open
I don't think
world
I ever ones. Actually played.
Okay.
Yeah, I've nothing to go towards it. I think the weirdest thing for me, which like in retrospect I realize is like, yes, this is how skateboard work, but the fact that you are always moving forward is something I haven't quite gotten my head around.
Yeah, finding the lines.
Yeah.
And then gone.
It's kind of like being in a flight simulator like that. Although like you just hold down, to stay still. Right.
Right. Exactly. And then also
it's hard
I'm
to think
still
of a situation where
the, camera controls are kind of strange to me.
You should really not have to touch the camera at all.
I think what it is by far, like in terms of like action-y games, by far what I've played is the most of is first person shooters. So I think I just instinctively am used to moving with both controls, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you want your thumb up on the face buttons in order to constantly be able to do a to ollie and to grind and stuff like that.
That
like,
makes sense.
They give you the ability to look around with the right stick, but like that I think is extraneous. Basically in Tony Hawk, if it is not in front of you, it does not exist. And if you want it to exist, you need it to be in front of you.
It is well known that skaters lack object permanence.
Right. They're basically sharks. That should definitely be like your thumb should be up on the face buttons for that. Mm-hmm. Like nobody tells you this, and also because nobody tells you this, like I developed a crazy grip on my controller to play Tony Hawk, where I've got my thumb for the bottom three buttons on the face, and then my index finger I wrap it up and around to tap onto the triangle button for grinding. Yeah.
Although I feel
my,
like
my hand
actually
hurts just listening to that.
That is the most like skate thing ever. Like it's definitely like, oh yeah, did you see Kay at the X Games? She totally skates with like both feet facing each other. Like that very much sounds like a thing I would hear about a skater.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where like nobody told me how to do this, so I just developed this, kind of like in times when I attempted to skateboard, like, oh yeah, no, I put my right foot up on the deck. And it's like, no, everybody, you push with your right foot. Like, no, I'm goofy foot. Well, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. That's just what feels natural to me.
Yeah,
it has a name now, so it's a trick.
I do appreciate that you can customize your skater down to literally like what foot do they push with.
Yeah, they added that. I have no idea what difference that makes.
I'm guessing that probably doesn't make a gameplay difference, although I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I didn't play. Basically, I stopped the series with 3. We actually just did a watch out for Fireballs about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, and I had a good enough time with it. So about the PS2 version, knowing this was coming out, and I had good enough time with it. I was like, okay, well, that episode came out like on the day that the 3 and 4 remake came out, and I was like, I want to get this on Switch too. That seems fun to me. And I just rolled right in and basically played all of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 again. I never did Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. So I never, got to see if like the, what foot you push with, you know, made any difference, but like, right. You know, whether you're goofy foot or, you know, regular foot is like, you know, it, like if you are skating outside of your stance, then you don't get the full benefit of your stats. Is the idea, and I do not know what other effect that is.
That's the other funky thing is like having to level up your skater and abilities. On one hand, I get the idea of like, oh, you know, this will help ease you into the game. But on the other hand, like if I've played some Tony Hawk before, just let me go wild. Like let's just get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And not worry about that.
It's really quick though. Like you can start with a pro skater who has all the stats you want. And literally the stat ups are just collectibles that you get. Like you don't even have to like earn money, in either 3 or the remakes.
Nice. I just grabbed Tony Hawk off the top. So
yeah,
I assumed that was the highest stats I could get, but I mean, stand corrected.
He has a lot of stats, but also he's specialized. So like he will not have a, you know, he will be really good at doing vert tricks, whereas everybody else is going to have different kind of specialties.
Yeah. That's one of the things I find kind of funny is that so many of the Tony Hawk games are very much like street levels, which is actually not what Tony Hawk specializes in.
Well, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But like something cool about the series is you get to, you get to know all these different skaters and stuff. Like, I don't know. There was literally one summer I paid attention to it, and it was 1999 when Tony Hawk did the 900 and then, at the X Games. And then I got Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, original one. So like that was the last time I cared about it. But like, I don't know, like it's neat that, his name is on it, but there are all these other people who like, I don't know, a lot of people, the only reason they know their names is because of these games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does seem like they went big time out of their way with that to have a diverse cast, which is pretty cool.
That is something very cool. They not only included, so a couple things I love about that. It is not just the original skaters that they brought in, but they brought in new skaters, you know, people who are kind of more contemporary to give them, kind of leg up. Like, yeah, we're the past of this. You're the present. But the other thing is the existing skaters, they're not like presented frozen in time. All of them look old as shit. It's like Jackass <Yes. yes> forever.
yep.
So that is really fun.
Also, I spent, not gonna lie, I actually spent most of my time playing around with the character customization, and it's very fun seeing just the character customization where they went wild with like tons and tons of clothing options. You can dress anything you want as long as you look like a skater.
Yeah. No, I did my create a skater, and it was like somebody gave me a prompt to make the most lesbian looking person who ever existed. Well,
and that was the other thing I was going to say is it is very, very easy to make gender nonconforming characters. Like, yeah. I think the only scenario I think the game doesn't support is like you can't really make basically like a trans mask person who's had top surgery.
Okay.
And like in a game where that's even something that like you would think to say, you know, kind of says a lot about the fact that like other than that, you can have like, you know, you can very easily, you know, make someone that's like I don't know, like, you know, someone who has boobs and facial hair is basically what I'm saying. You know, stuff like that. Like, you can make things that, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's actually diegetic. In the Tonyverse, for very obscure lore reasons, trans mask top surgery has gotten to the point that it is indistinguishable. That's a conscious choice.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the remakes, and this is me going from Tony Hawk 3 to the remake. I should be completely sick of it, because usually when I finish playing a game for WoF, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm played out. I'm done on this. And it is such a perfect game for like the Switch 2, like laying in bed to do or four rounds. Yeah. Playing it on there. It's neat. Like, it runs really well on that. And, you know, like, it looks good. Like, it literally could have just looked like, it could have just looked like it was on PlayStation 2, or even worse. I don't fucking care, as long as it plays great. But it does. And like, the new things that they add, that they brought in from, Tony Hawk 4, you know, different ways to connect, you know, vert tricks, you know, quarter pipe, half pipe, kind of things. I had never played with those, so it has been neat learning how to extend my combos with that, because like, outside of having different levels, that was the thing that they kind of, that made the biggest difference between, you know, between the different, games in the series, was like, okay, you had your basic set of moves in one, and then like, well, we need a way to extend combos between, places where you can't like grind or do tricks. So like, we add in manuals, and now you can do a wheelie. You have to balance, but like, you can do a wheelie from one place, you know, from one set of tricks to another, to kind of keep it going. And then they just kind of kept on adding in those connectors, making it probably pretty imposing to jump in and try and be fluent with it. Just kind of making it so you can put together these ridiculous combos, and just making it so you are constantly engaging with this, you know, kind of press your luck kind of thing. You know, do I go into another trick? Do I, you know, attempt this kind of daring high point value thing at the risk of losing points for everything that I had done up to this point? You know, prior to the last time I like committed my score, right?
Yeah.
I did not realize that you can actually finish and cash in a trick. I just keep on going till I crash every single time.
You're still going.
Yeah. No, I have grand designs and crash and restart the level and try again and crash and restart the level. You know, basically it gives you a 2-minute timer, but I only need 15 seconds, baby.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You're playing Tony Hawk roguelike. So I will say, I was actually pleasantly surprised compared to what I was expecting. I think partially, like I said, probably the thing like this I've seen the most was probably Dennis playing Skate, and compared to that, I appreciate the fact that, like, yes, you have to like say balance to do a manual or a grind, but the game basically assumes that your character knows how to do that, so it doesn't really do any of the whole like, oh, you have to come at this at like just the right angle or anything like that. It's more like you have to balance to be good at the skills, but you don't have to balance to just, you know, if you're just like, you know, going from place A to B and like need to grind down a railing, you should pretty much just do it.
It's not a sim. It's an arcade game. Like, it wants you to do cool shit. Like, that's what keeps you coming back. That is the biggest difference in spirit between the Skate series and Tony Hawk.
I will say it does feel a little bit like the grind button is a get out of jail free card.
Oh yeah. You can definitely just like snap onto the nearest thing if you want to.
Yeah. And from surprisingly deep into a trick or grab or whatever, snap onto the rail. And I've gotten away with stuff that I am like, yep, that wasn't physically possible. Not that anything that happens in these games.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't care about realistic as long as it's fun, I guess.
Yeah. But it is, I think when it does snap to that extent, it is disorienting. To the point where it's like, okay, I saved my combo by, you know, snapping onto a rail at this crazy angle. But now suddenly I've got to figure out which direction I'm heading and what just happened. And then I've crashed anyway. So, some kind of, I don't know, like bullet time. I think it was Skate had like kind of a bullet time, mode when you were doing tricks. It is a study in, like, I know I could have done that better if my brain fired just a little bit faster. And I don't know if I like that feeling.
I feel like they missed an opportunity to the bullet time. They could have called it like Hawk Vision or something.
Ooh, that's good. Yes.
Yeah.
I will say, circling way back around to the tutorial, I think you stopped one short, because I think they go, I did the tutorial as well. And I think they go grinding and then manuals. And it's like that one connector piece is what I think is the most essential.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I actually did go through manuals, but I think that was actually the last one I did, but
I did it, but I did not retain it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will say I have a hatred for flicking the stick as a control input.
Yeah, so then you wouldn't like Skate at all. That's not.
No. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's like all it is.
But Tony Hawk is funny. Definitely a D-pad game.
Yes.
To the detriment of my fingers. I think I have blisters.
I do appreciate the energy of the game, just like how optimistic and stuff like that the tutorials are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Tony Hawk. You know, like he's a delight.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is a little off topic, but like definitely follow him on social media because his posts are hilarious.
Oh yeah, I know, it's been the thing for years where people are like, "Hey, are you Tony Hawk?" Like, yeah.
Oh, I shit you not. I got an achievement while playing the game because I opened up photo mode while playing as Tony Hawk. Uh-huh. And the achievement is called, "Hey, you look like Tony Hawk."
Oh gosh. So wait, so you've been playing it too then?
Oh yeah. Sorry. I thought that was apparent. Yes. I for the past 2 days or so.
Okay.
I've been playing.
Fuck.
Like I said, I am all blistered up on my thumb, specifically the one for the D-pad, because everyone knows if you press it harder, you will do better.
Oh, yeah. You jump higher.
Not my experience. You want to keep a light touch? But
No, I need to suffer for my art.
Okay.
The art being face planting after a three-part combo that I could not bring down. So
yeah. My honest recommendation, Moxie, is just like... just keep doing like just free skate, because like the tutorials they break everything up, and just focus on trying to stay upright, I guess, because like this is a game that is about learning how to play the game, like, you know, for the majority of it.
It's also from a time in game design where having like secret areas in the level was a big thing. And so learning the levels, and you know, you get bonuses when you jump over certain gaps or get into certain areas. And I think if you're going to get serious about chasing a high score, you got to learn where all those things are. And they are not super apparent all the time.
Yeah. Also like in 3, the Foundry is not a very good opening level, in my opinion. I don't know. It's weirdly cramped in a way that like the Canada level is not. Like the Canada level is one of my favorites in the series. Yeah.
Canada's good. I think just the neighborhood would have been the right starting place. Like,
oh yeah.
Start skating in your neighborhood.
Suburbia.
It's right there,
that
guys.
Does
come on.
Seem appropriate.
Yeah.
I like that on the one hand, they don't do when you crash, they don't do any of the like injury porn stuff.
Yeah.
On the other hand, at least to me, it is kind of endearing. Like, I don't know, there's just, at least for me, just the right amount of like bespoke animation to how you crash, where like often it'll be like, you know, literally you kind of like tripping and you know things like that.
Oh yeah.
That I find really endearing.
It's weird because an awful lot of effort went into making that work and then being sure not to do the thing you alluded to, which is like the Mortal Kombat, like X-ray fatality thing where just the camera just infinitely zooms in on like an MRI of testicles just exploding.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
What's weird to me is you then can fast forward or kind of like static clip through getting back up. Mm-hmm. Like you splat. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't touch anything, the skater will stand back up. But if you touch a button, you'll get a little like record scratch sound and yeah, you're back on the board.
Like VHS, kind of artifact kind of thing to get back up. That's neat.
Which, yeah, you know, you're probably frustrated if you're watching that animation. So being able to jump out of it a little faster is a kindness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do feel like we're bearing the lead, though, on the real reason to play this game, which is obviously the soundtrack.
Soundtrack's good.
Yeah. That was actually the primary motivator for me getting into this is like, yeah, I want to be exposed to some like classic, you know, like early aughts punk music and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Some skater punk. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, there's a lot there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they've actually added a bunch of new stuff, you know, a bunch of like hip hop and even some like hyper pop stuff, which is kind of.
Yeah, there's a 100 Gex song on there. So that is kind of a thing that they did on the soundtracks. Like the hip hop has always been there. You know, like the standout track on Tony Hawk 3's soundtrack is, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, If You Must. That kind of has always been a really cool thing about it. And like even on these remakes, when they kind of pull in this, you know, an artist who was there before, they sometimes like swap out for a different song from that person than what was there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And there's like good stuff. Like there's a fucking Gang of Four song on there. Like it's awesome.
Yeah. Wait, like Knuth?
Like Gang of Four, the post-punk guys?
Oh, no, I was thinking Gang of Four, the guys who wrote design patterns for Java.
No.
I was thinking Gang of Four, the video I watched in incognito mode. So.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, boy. Oof. That one's rough, man. That one's pretty rough. The soundtracks, I mean, that goes all the way back. Soundtracks are really good in these games. Yeah.
I see they still got CKY on it, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, and they threw in something from from Run the Jewels. Like, yeah, there's tons of, I don't know. It's a whole thing. I've got such a soft spot in my heart for these. Even though I did, you know, 3 was about when I fell off and I was not very interested in like underground because of the Bam Margera of it all, like all the Jackass stuff. I wanted the skating and not running around doing stealth missions to do pranks or whatever. And the fact that like between the 1 and 2 remake and then this, like we have just gotten such a good, just kind of return to form on these is great.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm very excited to get to the Tony Hawk 4 levels because those are brand new to me.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Anything else about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. Did you have anything else, Moxie?
So I have two things. One of them's going to be real brief. Okay. Still been playing The Division 2. It's mostly, you know, more the same. The one thing I do want to highlight, just because it's an amazing example of some of the stupidity of the game I love, they just finished up an in-game event that's called Reanimated, where just straight up, like, if you don't headshot enemies, they will reanimate as zombies after you kill them.
Okay.
But what I love just capturing like some of the dumbness of how they handle like the Tom Clancy-ness. They're like, oh yeah, totally. These guys found like a cache of automatic defibrillators. Totally what's happening here. It's like, dude, they come back to life, but they come back to life explicitly as zombies.
They're shouting from my brains, dog.
So just, I love that. It's a fun event, and I love how stupid it is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more in terms of something new for me, and this is probably going to be similar to Tony Hawk, a thing where, like, I am someone who knows nothing about this that is probably explaining things in a very dumb way, but went and visited some friends for a board game night and played a card game called Dominion. So it's a deck building game where you are putting together a deck that provides creates a economy in effect. So you draw a hand and either can perform actions or a bunch of the cards of various treasures that give you an amount of money you can use in that round to buy another card to add to your hand. And then the ultimate goal is there are certain cards that are things like colonies or estates, and buying them adds both a useless card to your hand, but a useless card that at the end of the game provides victory points.
Okay.
What really stood out to me, and this is where I get into, like, I'm probably describing as though it is, like, earth-shattering to me, but someone that's into this is probably like, no, that's, like, super established mechanics. But what really stood out to me that was kind of cool is, one, it was cool playing a kind of a deck builder type game that feels kind of like Magic, except that you can cycle through your entire deck in like one or two hands, one or two rounds. And so it's much less of a like, oh, I'm conserving cards, trying to play, put together the best hand, and much more just like, what can I do the best I can do now? Which I found really interesting. And then also, I found really cool, the game has a fairly rigid turn structure in terms of, like, each round you can play one action, which would be kind of like a spell card, I think, in Magic, and you can make one purchase, and you can only do the purchase after the action, and anything you purchase or get from the action, that sort of thing, goes into your discard pile, so you don't immediately have it. So it's very rigid on like how a turn progresses. But what makes that cool is then you have cards that don't do that. So like, there's a card that's like a mine where you can basically make a purchase, but it goes directly into your hand, whereas normally it goes into the discard, stuff like that. So I found that really compelling, especially because you can, eventually, I really tried to focus on card economy for my deck, and so I got to the point where like each round I would cycle through pretty much my entire deck, and because I had focused on that so much, I tended to have pretty low quality cards, but I got all of them all the time, which was cool.
Draw is OP.
Yeah, so I really really enjoyed this. Had a lot of fun. It sounds like maybe some of you guys have played this before.
Oh yeah,
it's been a while, but I've played it.
Dominion's like the de facto deck builder game, in my opinion, where I think that was one of the first ones that gained like a decent amount of popularity in our generation. But it's, I feel like it's since been perfected or elaborated on, like Ruins of, or Lost Ruins of Arnak, has the same mechanics you're talking about, but then has like a whole other like worker placement board mechanic on top of that.
What if more systems?
Yeah. And then the other thing is like Dominion has a whole bunch of expansions. So if you like Dominion, there's like a huge rabbit hole you can go down and get like different combinations of like cards that you add and play with in a game.
Yeah. So we were actually playing with, from what I understand, my friends had a bunch of the expansions, and from what I understand, we were playing with kind of the, a set of cards that was sort of like the buffed version of the basic cards. So like fairly basic mechanics, but, you know, tending to give you, you know, more gold, more draws, that sort of thing. So the game kind of progressed faster. And then also, they put in like the Goon card, which, is, as I understand it, is kind of the most basic, as I understand, like the base set, there's no offense. There's no way to like attack other players. And that's basically the least annoying version of an attack card. Also, it you know, gives you the ability to be like, okay, I'm going to Goon.
Yeah. That's, I was caught off guard by the naming of that card.
Yep.
I mean, this game was made before that became the meme.
It's true.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, yeah, no, I enjoy it. I also enjoy that some of the cards have some, like, implied kind of class commentary where there's, like, certain cards you can't purchase if you have any low-tier treasure in play. Which is kind of funny. It's like, yeah, we don't sell to plebs.
I always feel bad that I don't have anything to like contribute when card games or board games come up. My brain doesn't work. Anytime somebody talks about, like, tries to explain from scratch the rules of one of these games, I feel like they're describing a dream that they have. Mm-hmm. That is not on anybody. It is literally just me. I don't know. Yeah. So if it seems like I take a backseat whenever this or magic comes up, it's like, I am a field, I guess.
So I think I was having this conversation with Dennis, like the feature in board games that I would love to see is, I feel like the experience of every board game, the first time you play it is like you get halfway through and realize that you were interpreting one of the mechanics wrong. Yeah, and I would love to see a game that came preset with like, all right, if you screwed it up halfway, here's like how you fudge things in order to get the game back on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That imagines that you could account for all the ways that players can screw up a game, and that's not possible.
It's not.
See, I'm not even saying that though, but like, you could even just do like, oh yeah, if you realize like you've done this and so like your economy is jacked up, like here's a semi-balanced way to like just kind of inject more stuff into the game, or you know things like that.
House, I mean, rules, baby.
Yeah, yeah. Just never admit you're wrong. That's how we play this game now.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoken like a true American.
America.
Hashtag Monopoly.
Oh. Yeah, the one that stands out for me is, Ben, you might know that there's a game that's it's like you're a team of firefighters and you've got different classes, that sort of thing.
Ooh, I don't think I know that one.
I know it's one of them that is like fairly highly rated on like Board Game Geek or whatever. But I remember the first time we played it, we like very much over interpreted the rules for fire spreading, and so we've ended up being the whole "this is fine" meme. Like, you know, we you know, had only rescued like half of the people and the entire building was on fire.
This is why I only play board games or card games that Ben really understands and with Ben present.
I guess you got to move to Seattle then if you want to play board games.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, also, it's apparently the game I'm thinking of is Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
Okay, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. Dominion.
Yep. That's all I got.
Okay. I've got one in addition to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 Plus 4. And it should be short. It's something that I streamed over the weekend that I thought was cool and I want to bring to people's attention because it is small. This is a game called Chorus of Carcosa. This, yeah. It was released like in March of this year and it just kind of came up, a Steam sale or something like that. Kind of came up, recommended to me. This is a first person horror game. It's like 3 hours or something. I beat it in two nights of streaming. And it drew my attention because there's basically nothing in games that is like directly inspired by and tries to adapt anything about The King in Yellow, the Robert W. Chambers kind of weird fiction that inspired H.P. Lovecraft, like not really present in games like Signalis. You find a copy of The King in Yellow, but as much as I love Signalis, there's not really much to do with that. The game doesn't have much to do with it. There's a standout sequence in Scald that's really good. This kind of like kind of goes for it. It's really cool. So you play as a sculptor who someone keeps sending him copies of The King in Yellow, and the building that you're in was designed also by somebody. Basically, like it's kind of a locus of this, you know, corruption that is coming over, you know, from Carcosa, from the Eldritch City or whatever. And like you are, you know, going to get a package at the front door and like stuff is changing around you. And then you run into your neighbor who is a composer who has ripped her own eyes out and is like coming after you. And as you are trying to escape her and figure out how to get out of the apartment building, you end up like being like shifted into like nightmare versions of the place, kind of like brought into, you know, the personal hell spaces of these kind of like different artists or different people who live in this building. So that's kind of like the setup, kind of a Silent Hill nightmare world kind of thing. But like something that is, I think, super cool about this is like, it's a small team, I think is based out of Ukraine or something like that. But like, there are large portions of this that just kind of feel like, it's like the greatest hits of kind of modernish, horror game, you know, like indie horror game design kind of things. Like there's a section where it's like anomaly spotting, where like it's basically like that Exit 8 game that I played where you were on the subway platform and needed to spot things that were wrong and, you know, go one way if things were wrong and go a different way. There's like stealth, but it is like stealth where you have to manage your breath because the composer, you know, can only hear you. And if your breathing is loud, then she'll come after you. There's kind of like a few different things like that where it's like, oh yeah, no, this is like, kind of trying to engage in a bunch of, they have obviously played a bunch of other horror games and kind of taken like the best stuff that they can get, or at least some of the coolest ideas that they could see in those into this.
One of the things that I associate with like, you know, the portal opening up or, you know, getting into this other world, I guess I should say one of the things I associate with The King in Yellow horror is how much the people on the inside don't acknowledge that anything weird or fucked up is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does this game kind of play with that? Because, like, you know, lady who ripped out her eyes trying to hunt you down feels pretty on the nose horror centric.
Yeah.
But the stuff that was really unnerving to me in like King and Yellow stories that I've read or mm-hmm. listened to is like, you know, the people who are just so nice and normal until they're not.
Yeah. So you're not just playing as the sculptor in this. There's a point where you jump into somebody else's perspective where you get kind of like a little bit more of that. Your character himself, he's voiced like a comedy character. Like there's something about the way he's written, he reacts kind of like somebody from the real world would, which is actually kind of refreshing in some of this, but like there is stuff that's going on that he does not call out as the apartment building gets kind of like weirder and more corrupt and all of that.
Okay.
And so, like there are other people who are kind of having a, not a similar version of yours, but like they are so far gone into it that they don't necessarily, you know, recognize what is going on or like they're past acknowledging it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. So one element actually to that's why I'm actually thinking of trying this game is one of the core things I think about The King in Yellow compared to like most of Lovecraft's fiction is that in most of the King in Yellow stories, like everything that's happening is more or less happening in plain view.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it'll just be like, oh yeah, like suicide booths are just something that's like on every corner. Oh,
they
like,
do cool stuff with that in this. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I like that they go with that because to me, one of the things I always wanted to see from like Lovecraftian horror is someone explore like, if the stars ever were right and, you know, the deep ones, came back or whatever, like, yeah, probably a lot of people are going to die, but like eventually people are going to move on with their lives.
I mean,
and all, so like when- I.
When huh? Cthulhu rises from Dread Relier, he will just teach all humans different new exciting ways to kill.
Yeah, exactly. So I love the idea of like a world where these are just things that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of really like good, really fun world building in this if you know stuff from the Chambers stories. Mm-hmm. It's neat. It's modest. Like don't go into it expecting like, I don't know, the stars and moon or anything like that. But like I went into it kind of expecting it to be like roughly King in Yellow inspired Flashlight House. And it kind of wasn't that.
Okay. But not the stars and moon, but what about you, Goth?
It depends on if they take you there in a brain jar.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yep. Got to take that up with Amigo though. Yeah, it's neat. I thought it was cool. Any other questions about that?
No.
All right.
Cool.
Dennis.
Yeah. So two games, one very old and recurring and one, that I talked about last time. I'll start with just the quick one. Trackmania has a new season out. And it is the game's 5-year anniversary.
This version of the game's 5-year anniversary.
This reboot slash, you know, it got turned very successfully into a live service game, I guess. It's been 5 years since that happened, which is wild to me. Even more wild is they have a playtime counter.
Uh-oh.
I am up, over 1,500 hours in the past 5 years. Which I did the math because I don't know how to look away, and I have spent 3% of my life on this game over the last 5 years.
Oh wow!
That's not 3% of waking hours. That's 3% of my life.
Huh.
Now there is some of that where like I would leave a level editor up for a 24-hour period when
that's
I was
the
away.
Thing, right?
Yeah. So there's a little bit of wiggle room in there, but the new season is good. I think I mentioned with the last season that they're kind of leaning more and more into RPG elements, like, figure out how to get to the end of this versus get to the end of this as fast as possible tracks. Mm-hmm. And they very much lean into that with the new season. The final track is a full-on 5-minute RPG style track, which, you know, anything over a minute is long in Trackmania. So a 5-minute track is something else. But it's all good. So I pleased to see them really leaning into those other styles. Nothing else to say beyond that. It's just 5 years since this came out, and I really, really love this game. As the hours played show.
yeah, it'd be weird if you didn't.
Yes, yeah. So that is Trackmania, and then I finished The Altars, which we talked about for a couple different reasons last time. I was very pleased with how the game worked from a mechanical resource management standpoint right up through the end. It kind of, dangles all of these, if you could push a little further and build this and have this before the clock runs out, that'd be extra good. And so going for all of those kind of stretch goals, I don't know if is the right term for it, but the objectives are set up well to have you overextend yourself in interesting ways that you then have to solve.
That sounds like that team.
Story-wise, they do a pretty good job, playing with this whole sci-fi, what if you could create versions of yourself with memories of a different life and a different set of choices. Mostly it's satisfying. It's kind of funny though. There are some very, clear choices that you have to make, in terms of do you let the outside world know that you have alters, or is it just the fewest number of people possible? Do you try to repair the relationship with your ex-wife versus not, et cetera. And those choices all felt meaningful, but then at the end, it kind of does one last round of are you sure you want to do it this way? Moments that cheapened the earlier choices for me.
So you
spend all this time engineering a sleeping gas. I won't say why. And there are other alternatives for how you can solve the problem that you need to solve. And then you get to the final cutscene where he, boards the ship, and then a choice pops up of plant the sleeping gas or don't.
No.
It's why are you asking me again?
I want to forget gets to that point that
and says no.
Yeah.
It's a complete non-choice. And that just, again, it felt like a really interesting choice when I was deciding which route to take. But adding that extra confirmation at the end felt superfluous. They did a really good job. From what I can tell, there are two alters that you have to have. And they're definitely kind of main characters in a way. But the game is structured such that I don't think it would be feasible to get to every version of yourself in a single playthrough. Or you would have to do some major planning and jumping through hoops to do it in a way that was not just trying to, accomplish the main objectives. So I would be interested. I think I had a total of 6 alters in my final playthrough. And I think there's probably at least 4 that I never got to, which when you branch and create an alter, that can also reveal additional alters. And so there's potentially even more that I just never saw. And so I'd be very interested to see what happens in terms of all those extra ones. Cause you, it's very, cheesy, but you learn from yourself. And these different versions of you have lessons to teach, and that will open up new options in the dialogue.
Okay.
And so you learn assertiveness from one, and then you can assert yourself more so in dialogue choices than you would have been able to, or optimism or vulnerability or, all these things pop up. And so I'm curious what all these other alters that I didn't get to, what additional options they would have unlocked. And the game has a menu to track which of those you've gotten, that is not connected to a specific save. So, it feels like it is meant to be played through many times.
And I imagine second playthroughs go quicker because you're not fucking around.
You kind of know how everything works. You know where you want to go on the research tree, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, very cool experience. Some very, interesting moral dilemmas. They try to, make every side of it seem, equally good and equally bad.
Mm-hmm. In a couple different ways. It'd be dumb if it was like, oh yeah, this is totally the right way. No downsides, but
you mostly, they're mostly okay at that. I feel like there is a path that is fairly like, you know, you almost kind of have to be choosing to ignore some things to go away from the kind of the main path. I'm trying to think of the non-spoilery way to say it, but there still is, you know, the character that kind of like, even though they're presented very sympathetically, it's like, yeah, but you're kind of a villain.
Yeah.
It's like so many villains in comic books and stories in general, like have extremely valid points. They just go to the conclusion of, so I need to kill everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, dude, you were making so much sense right up until that non sequitur at the end.
You don't want a villain who knows they're a villain. That's boring.
Right. Right. But at the same time, maybe a conclusion just a step shy of, so let's kill everyone.
Yeah.
Would suffice.
Yeah, we're not Republicans.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, that is my time with the Alters. I don't know yet if I'll do a second playthrough. Like, I'm mm-hmm. curious about these additional characters, but I feel like I would just be speed running creating them.
Mm-hmm. You could probably get a lot of that just by like reading a TV Tropes or a wiki or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it might be in review territory instead of replay territory.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed my time with the game.
Cool. Game sounds rad.
It seems like a nice pairing that this came out the same year as Mickey 17. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. There's a lot. I need to watch that movie still, so I can't comment directly, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, the two feel very similar.
Ben, how about you?
I just got two things. Neither of them are video games, so sorry about that.
Oh, okay. You've been busy.
It's two things I do want to talk about. They're both board games. So the first one is I played a game of Twilight Imperium. I think I might have talked about this one. The last time I played was like 6 years ago.
You told us you were going to be doing this.
Yeah. It was with the.
That's game. The real reason you were gone, is the entire time was spent on Twilight Imperium.
Honestly, yeah. We played the 14-round game instead of the 10-round game, so there it goes.
Oh, wow.
No, we played the regular 10-round game, basically played from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Two of those hours were giving rules instructions and stuff like that. God. And maybe, but yeah, but it was a. Yeah, it was a really good experience. We encourage, for anyone who doesn't know this game, it's basically a space game, like Space Risk, but there's asymmetry, and instead of controlling countries giving you reinforcements like in Risk, they give you like resources, like influence or goods. And you're on this giant space board. But the idea is you have objectives that get revealed every round and you kind of want to complete them. And you can negotiate with people. And it's highly encouraged to do that. And the game that we played was, we had a lot of that going on. So that made it a lot of fun. Because like in preparation for this, I had watched a bunch of tournaments played of this to see how people do with that. And basically the players that you see there, basically everything's negotiation. So instead of just being like bulldozing through somebody's territories and like taking their home planet, which you might be able to do, you'd be like, hey, how much will you pay me not to do this? Because I can clearly do this right now. Essentially, yes. But I mean, the other person has to be open to that because like from their perspective, they're like, well, if I get bulldozed, I'm not going to win the game. So why don't I pay this person a few trade goods and they'll leave me alone? Mm-hmm. So it makes the game a lot more interesting when you get a good group of people like this together. So like two sort of house rules that we had that was kind of influenced by some of the videos I watched. You could go outside at any time and have a secret conversation with anyone if they were complicit, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the other rule was you had to pick a theme song when you were attacking somebody on the board.
Okay.
And so amazing. That made it a joyous experience. I had these like Star Destroyer looking things, so I chose Imperial March whenever I attacked people.
Okay.
Great time. So anyway, I don't know. This is just like kind of like a more famous game in the board game world because it's like it's well known how long of a game it is, and it's basically a day long game. So just being able to play it is kind of like a rite of passage. So I was yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. So
what proportion of the group had played it before?
Me.
Out
of five.
Okay.
But
this is hell for anyone else and heaven for Ben.
So this is the group of people I play, like my normal, like we have a board game group that plays every 2 weeks. And so they're pretty well versed in like Euros and stuff like that. And we're interested in this. And I gave them months ahead of time, material to prep to get the rules down.
Okay.
Most people took advantage of that. One person was reading the rules the day of in the morning. But that said, it was a very close game. I ended up winning with 10 points, but then everybody else had 8 points and one person had 7 points. And so in a game where like a round reward is 2 points at the end of the game, it was a very close game. And had I not won the round that I did, then it would have been basically anybody's game because there's another 2-point opportunity the next round. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun. The group liked it a lot, so might be playing it again in the future. But I've kind of come around on this game where I feel like I got burned out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Playing it the first like 4 or 5 times that I did, but kind of taking a deeper dive on the different strategies and stuff, I'm kind of back on board. So enjoyable, but you can only do it so often because it is a huge time sink. And this is 4th edition without the expansion, in case anyone who's listening cares about that.
Wow.
Outside of that one, I picked up another board game that was recommended from somebody at work. This is a game that's almost better left not Googling or looking up, unless you want to buy it. But it is called City of 6 Moons. And prominently on the box, it does not say designed by, but it says discovered by Amabel Holland. This is like a European game developer, but the premise of the game is that this person, was either abducted or found a bunch of aliens, watched them play a game together, got the rule book from them, and then wrote a short note to the player saying, like, this is the best I could find. This is what I think the game kind of is. Have fun.
It's like the game of her or whatever.
Possibly, yeah. I'm not familiar with that one. But, yeah, the idea is you don't know the game rules. You have a booklet that supposedly tells you what the game rules are, but it's all written in this alien language. And so it's a lot of like symbols and iconography. There's a few things that you can sort of figure out pretty quickly. For example, since the name of the game is City of 6 Moons, it has the symbol way of saying that on the box. So that's kind of your first foothold into the game where it's like, okay, one of these means this, one of these means this, one of these means this. What else could this mean? Or what symbols look similar to that that could also mean similar things? So this is, I think you could play with a group if people wanted to like talk about things out with, you know, like with amongst one another and try and conjecture things. I'm currently playing this by myself. It is slow moving, but it is enjoyable. This is basically what I do instead of like reading a book is I'll just pop this open and just kind of look through it. You're given like a playmat, a rule booklet, and a deck of cards. And there's kind of different classes of cards that have different functions. And then a bunch of wood chips.
Chips or wood chips?
It like wood cylinders.
Markers. Yeah, wood markers. Yes.
I'm just imagining a game that comes with a bag of mulch.
just a bunch of sawdust. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I thought this was a really unique idea, and they commit really hard to the premise. It's pretty fun.
So that's, I mean, it sounds like the board game kind of like, I don't know. It sounds like Tunic to me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, right? That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Does, I mean, I trust that you haven't like actually looked at this to see, but does there exist a translation of it? Like that actually says like, hey, here's what this is. So when you decide that you're done, you can check and see how close you were.
Yeah. I'm sure people post online, like what the rules are, and there's probably like a definitive answer, but mm-hmm. I'm very much avoiding that. Cause it's like,
yeah, I know.
This is like one of the things where it's like a gift you can only unwrap once. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be there is no answer. Yeah.
It could be. It could be. But I assume since like people find this really enjoyable, I'm sure that there's probably something that most people narrow down to when they're trying to solve it. But
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, no, just like reading that with a notebook in hand or I don't know, like dedicating a whole day with like four other people to, mm-hmm. you know, kind of just bounce ideas off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very elegant experience because it's very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's a cool idea.
Yep.
City mm-hmm. of Six Moons.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, it is a question that I asked the nice people on behalf of Desiree. So thank you to Desiree for the suggestion. You know, there are so many good, like, you did it chimes in video games that there's got to be one that fires in your head whenever you accomplish an objective in real life. So mm-hmm. what is that chime and which game is it from?
Yeah, and Threnza gets us started here with what's going to be a theme saying Final Fantasy VI Victory Fanfare.
A you theme, know. I get it. That's great.
You know,
that is that the da na 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 na? Or no, it's I can't do it. Yes, that is what I was trying to do. Yes.
It's the same kind of like tune throughout the entire series. There are just different kind of arrangements and instrumentations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moxie, what does Case say?
Case says, depending on the complexity and difficulty of the task, either the Final Fantasy Victory Fanfare or the Legend of Zelda Puzzle Solve Jingle.
Mm-hmm. The Puzzle Solve Jingle being, oh gosh, not da-na-na-na.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's one of the things I love about Zelda is the fact that there's kind of two.
Yeah, and I always remember the difference because the da-na-na-na one is you always get that when you pick something up.
Yeah.
So I think you got the thing. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a whole nother segment on the words that you attach to purely instrumental pieces because yes. I have mm-hmm. a couple of those.
Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, haven't played in years, but it would probably be the World of Warcraft level ding.
I don't remember what the WoW one sounds like.
Yeah, I don't think I know that one either.
That space in my head is occupied by the EverQuest level ding, which is the loudest sound in the entire world. Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says the Final Fantasy Battle Victory tune, probably the one from 12 since I played it the most, but it could also be a combo after all these years and games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, kind of cycle through. It's whichever one you play the most. Jala responded and said this, but make it 7 for me. So yeah, I think that's the one I think a lot of people have in their head when they think of the Final Fantasy Victory theme, because that's the one most people have played.
How many battles on average do you play in a Final Fantasy?
Hundreds.
It's got like, if not thousands, right?
I mean, I don't know. I always get weird about that distinction just because like it can feel the same, but like, I don't know. You'll take a look and be like, oh yeah, over the course of this, you played 320 battles or whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's an order of magnitude among friends?
I do love the implication that in these Final Fantasy games, by the end of it, you're like a spunky, delightful 13-year-old who's like killed hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see here. Kate says the Sonic the Hedgehog fanfare that could be heard in the first two games in the series and then was abandoned forever in favor of something with less punch.
I don't, what would that be? Cause I remember like some of the music, like, was it Green Hill Zone and stuff, yeah. But
it's all, so like a lot of the fanfares are like, are just versions of the Green Hill Zone tune.
Okay.
think the Invincibility tune. So the I think it's like that, except it's more fanfare-y than that. And then Moxie, what does Casca say?
Casca says, the level up sound in Diablo 2 just has a nice done sound. Mm-hmm. It's like a period to the end of the quest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, like, I know that because I've played so freaking much Diablo 2, but I can't pull it to mind.
And I played that in the last 2 years, and I can't remember what it is. Yeah, this stuff has to get to you early. Has to get to you earlier a lot, just to break away from the Final Fantasy victory fanfare, and because I already mentioned the EverQuest one, the Dark Souls series new area title card sound when I walk into, like when I go to a new place, you know, or like see, you know, like see like a majestic view or whatever, you just get the, you just kind of whooshing sound a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That always fires for me, because I love when you get that, in a Souls game,
especially if you're not expecting it.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
The one that I want to play in my head every time I do something is the GTA San Andreas, like, mission completed music. Do you guys know what I'm talking about with that one?
Yeah, I have a vague recollection of it, and it's the GTA San Andreas one, so it kind of has some, like, turntable effect in it.
Yeah, it's got some of that synth, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so you want that to play in your head.
That would be some good hype music, man.
Yeah, it would.
It sounded like you were going to follow up with like, but what plays instead is,
is the screams of the afflicted. No.
Moxie, how about you?
Man, I don't know. So I've got a ton of like video game sound effects that are, very, very kind of similar things. So, in particular, the turret saw you sound from Half-Life, and the like you're low on ammo sound. I once had an alarm clock that played the low on ammo sound, which always freaked me out every morning. But I can't think that I really have that much for like the victory, victory type sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying you don't succeed
maybe like
in games
the coin
much.
Pickup sound from Mario.
Yeah. Sorry, you mentioning Half-Life stuff. I do sometimes make the boop 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 wah, 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 like Half-Life med station sound I inject my estrogen. I do sometimes do that.
Yes.
Oh man. Let's see.
You gotta get your canon straight. It's an RE4 case. You're making the Half-Life sounds.
I can do whatever
you're posting
I want.
The Dark Souls pictures.
Yeah, I can do.
You can be whatever gender you want, but get your bit right.
See, I think my hope for that scenario would be like maybe the sound from like a Magical Girl transformation, so okay. Like the Sailor Moon or something.
Yeah, yeah, the little chant that she does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I'll combo off of Moxie's. I hear the like flag gotten sound in Mario. The da 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 da.
Oh, that's a good one.
The weird thing is, then I also hear the points ticking down.
Right,
and the two are part and parcel. You cannot separate them.
Now, how good were you at Mario? Do you then hear the fireworks?
No, I wish. On my better days, I do.
Well, yeah. Cool. Good question. Thank you, folks, for responding. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go and follow us on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis.
Mm-hmm. And I say it from time to time, but Oh yes, yeah, and thanks on the Nestor, Slack, yes. or on Blue Sky. Always feel free to hit me up with ideas, because yes. We've done 550 of these.
So. A bunch of them, yeah.
it's good to have other minds on it too.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Moxie, you have what I presume is some good news.
Yeah. So the SAG-AFTRA voice actors, video game voice actor strike is officially ended. It had been suspended for a while because basically the management and labor had arrived at an agreement. So they suspended the strike, but it hadn't been officially voted on. But it was voted on. It passed. About 95% of the voting members supported it. Mm-hmm. Which is, obviously pretty significant. It's got a roughly 15% increase in pay immediately, and that's going to increase like 3% for, I think, the next 2 or 3 years, and also some increase to retirement fund.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing, though, is some, finally reached an agreement on AI. Where basically any use of AI or generation of AI from a actor's performance has to have informed consent. And effectively that consent gets suspended if a strike occurs.
Okay. So it can't be like, well, we'll just scab you in with your own voice.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of that's basically the story. But yeah, seems like a win. I think the only fear I would have is the fact that, like, I don't know, I feel like informed consent doesn't mean non-coerced consent.
It's a start. Mm. And right. Like it is at the very least an established beginning point for future for future negotiations, like I think as the practices and stuff change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is not to minimize your concern. I just think that, like, I don't know, like the Screen Actors, like SAG-AFTRA, they ended up, when they came out of their strike like a little while back, like not on the greatest of terms. Like it was like voted on and ratified, but there were serious concerns about AI productions here. So the fact that the video game voice acting wing was able to stick up for themselves, I think is at the very least a good precedent for a part of the industry that is still pretty exploitative.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I do feel like I would expect someone to try to replace video game voice actors before, like, like Robert Downey Jr. or someone.
Yeah. So it's good. They voted on it, so they must have wanted it. We love organized labor here on the network. So sweet. Let's see, speaking of, kind of the opposite side of this, or at the very least a little bit more complicated, have you all been paying attention to this, Subnautica 2 situation?
Yeah.
So this sucks. So Subnautica 2, sequel to just a stupidly popular survival game, takes place on an ocean planet. It's been in development for a little while. It was supposed to hit early access this year, kind of between the, sometime after the, Subnautica 1 ended up being really popular. It was bought by this new publisher, Krafton, South Korean company. Hasn't done much in the way of like big games prior to this, but regardless. Or a little bit earlier this month, Bloomberg reported that the game had been delayed by the publisher into 2026. And that coincided with the fact that there was supposed to be a $250 million bonus if the developer was able to ship something to release in 2025. It was not the developer's choice to delay it. It was the publisher being the one who potentially would stand a gain by not having to, pay that out. Right. So, you know, that is the story that kind of came through in the Bloomberg report. Like there were other lots of discontent in the relationship, I think, at that point. And then kind of the newest part of this, and this is still ongoing and is like breaking into larger business, like, you know, business press, which is weird, is that, Krafton came around and said, yeah, so those executives at the developer, like we paid them a shitload of money and then they just like basically stopped doing anything. And the game is in a sorry state that couldn't have been released because the people who we gave money to put this out basically abandoned their workers at the studio. And so they're like, yeah, it's just not ready. So we're going to have to, you know, we'll do our best to salvage it and pay the existing employees, the Undiscovered Worlds or whatever it is. I forgot the name of the studio. We'll compensate them fairly, but yeah, those head developers, Unknown Worlds. Yes. Those developers are out. So like basically the CEO and then like the two lead designers of Unknown Worlds have basically been sacked.
And they're out with the $225
million. Yes.
No. Still in their pockets.
I don't know that detail. Not the bonus, but yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they didn't get the bonus. I think they did get their initial pay.
Yes.
And notably, Kratom or whatever said that they would compensate the remaining employees fairly, but very explicitly did not say what they were going to compensate them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, it's going to be the raddest pizza party.
So, I mean, like, our sympathies are pretty clear, like in a dispute between the people who are making the game and the publisher, I'm probably going to side with the people making the game. It's unclear. You know, I don't have basically like I side a little bit more on the Bloomberg report because that has reporting out of it. And the publisher side of it is just their statement around it.
Yeah.
There was since then leaked internal documents of the publisher, at least saying like, yeah, we need, you know, we asked, there is supposed to be more content and it's not ready for early access. Like that there apparently was explicitly content that was planned that didn't get done in time.
Mm-hmm.
Although whether that's like just like, yeah, that the plan wasn't reasonable or, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they couldn't have, gone to early access.
Mm-hmm. So I am unclear. I think basically in the absence of a lot of certainty, I just feel really bad for the rank and file people at the studio who are kind of being kicked around and were promised a bunch of money and now their game is delayed and they might have to do a shitload more work, maybe under crunch, blah, 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 like have under new leadership. None of it sounds good.
I think in any case, Krafton had the wrong idea when they bought an underwater game.
Well, yeah.
Actually, kind of with that, though, I will say one thing that does seem a little bit weird is, like, it does seem a little strange to, like, buy an explicitly anti-capitalist game and then be like, and then they didn't like management.
I mean, like Amazon bought the filming rights to Disco Elysium. Like there's no, yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with it.
I mean, and look what happened.
Yeah, I guess.
I have read this paragraph three times and I am still unclear. The $225 million that they allocated to these executives that then, you know, dipped, was paid to them and the executives have left with $225 in their pocket, or it is like, well, we were going to give this money, but we never did.
Oh, the statement's a fucking mess. And they talk about like, oh, 90% of that was going to go, et cetera. I've got no clue. Like, and I, like, well, which part of it's the purchase price.
Yeah. Like if someone put $225 million in my pocket and was like, you get that up front, you would never see me again. I'm sorry. I am not above admitting that I would be gone.
Yeah. It would change my relationship to the work. In that case, that's bad on the publisher for doing that.
Yeah. Like if someone was dumb enough to set up that deal where they actually walked with the money, I can't imagine that being the scenario.
I mean,
but also, like I said, I keep on reading this statement and it distinctly allows for that having been the case.
Yeah.
Also, if you're tying that much to like a bonus for getting the game done, there'd probably be something specific in the contract of what constitutes as done.
Yeah. So
there's not this like ambiguity, but who knows?
Right.
The other thing that, at least as I understand it's in play here, is that for the regular customers, that bonus was only going to the people that got fired. However, they had promised to split it equally with the employees.
Right.
So that is a potential element of even if the company is like, oh yeah, even though all this went down, we're going to pay the employees the bonus they were originally promised.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the... You know, $250 divided or $250 million divided among my understanding is about 200 employees is like change your life money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas my understanding is what was actually explicitly allocated to your employees was 10% of that, which is, you know, still a lot of money, but not like, you know, you can retire money.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that gets me is like, it's the same investment if you give that $250 million equally distributed versus center it at the top. And I think you would have a lot more motivated workforce in general. Like, it's not just the three people making the game.
Yeah.
Wow, I can tell team. You've like, been out of industry for a while.
Yeah.
Motivated workforce is not a priority for businessmen.
No.
But just, no. Yeah, it's like if the math is the same, why not do the cool thing? But
I wish good.
I was going to say, why does evil exist?
I wish the details were clearer. You know, I don't know that this is going to resolve cleanly. I have no idea what this means for the game. I think it means we're not going to be seeing it anytime soon. I think is the takeaway here, which is a bummer. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm not crushed because this is probably going to be like another Subnautica game, like the expansion, but that would be cool still too. So
yeah, it would still be really, yeah.
See, I was hoping for like Supernautica, like, I don't know, you're in the sky now or something.
You're floating in space now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that Ubernautica?
Yeah. Ben, what is, speaking of high profile people leaving a creative project,
yeah. This one I think happened maybe a couple weeks ago, but I wasn't around last week. This one is talking about Neil Druckmann leaving The Last of Us television show. This was announced back in the beginning of July. I was kind of interested in this because I watched the first season and was pretty into it. I haven't seen the second season yet.
Neither have I.
Yeah, I think it's all been released by this point. Mm-hmm. But essentially, from what it sounds like, I haven't seen it. It sounds like season three is picking up at the halfway point of the game, where if you play the game, you probably know what I'm talking about. But there's basically two showrunners. There's Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, the guy who did Chernobyl and season one. And so he's going to be the person that's left to do the remaining season or seasons of the show. He's quoted that they need at least two more seasons to do the show. If you can do arithmetic, you would think there'd only be one more season, but you know, who knows? But the action of Neil Druckmann leaving kind of puts a little bit of a stink on it, or kind of seems like a no faith sort of action. despite the rationale given for it being that he's going to focus the next game that Naughty Dog's putting out, which is the Intergalactic game. So, yeah, a little bit of ambiguity there. You know, he could mean what he says with trying to focus on that, and the TV show is just going on peachy, or there could be drama, so who knows?
I don't know enough about who did what. I just know that season two, as it existed, was not getting, like, it wasn't doing it for people.
Just that Ellie was unrecognizable from the game Ellie.
Okay.
And that has, so she, I'm not like, talking about
actually
anything.
Made rational decisions.
I haven't watched it, so I can't say directly.
Yeah.
But the sense I got was like, I don't know. She was playing house in the apocalypse versus being an actual person.
Mm.
So yeah.
But also go ahead, Ben.
I was gonna say, I want to withhold judgment, because it's like, I know that the game all by itself is already super polarizing, so it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. I do want to watch it for myself and maybe listen to the podcast where they usually talk about why they're deciding the things that they're deciding, and kind of judge it off of that. But yeah, I agree. I'm not expecting as much as it was from season one.
Yeah.
It's really enjoyable if everyone can explain themselves for 3 hours per episode. Is not a good...
Yeah, Neil Druckmann had to go back to the studio and release that weird and God, just profoundly anti-art thing, which is like, here's The Last of Us 2, but told chronologically. It's like, did you see that? Like, oh yeah, there's a new mode. It's not split in two anymore. Like it shows everything in chronological order. No flashbacks, everybody.
Oh my God.
See, I feel like I would actually kind of like to see that, just to see, like, does it actually hold together, or is there things where it's like, oh, without the, you know, artifice, like, a lot of this stuff makes no sense.
I think you would
just
make
morbid curiosity.
You would feel very different about the first half if you knew how the second half panned out, I think.
Right.
Yeah. And if you saw it going at the same time, seeing the aftermaths as they go would be real rough. Having not seen the series, it's hard for me to say, but like, given the reception of season two, it's a creative shakeup doesn't seem that unwise, or, you know, it seems like at least there's a reason. So
it's like a shake off more than a shake up.
Yeah. Dennis, I basically anything related to the Minecraft movie, like it just reads as static to me. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, I have kids, so they delivered my tickets with a court order to go see this movie.
Okay.
And I did.
Did you take a chicken with you?
No. And the theater did not erupt into chaos upon the line that shall not be said being uttered. Aside, this is not what the story is about, but man, is it interesting to think that the next, like, Rocky Horror Picture Show level cult viewing experience might be the Minecraft movie. But I'm not going to go there.
We're so far beyond that kind of monoculture that I don't think that anybody's going to remember this movie exists in 3 years.
Yeah. As soon as the TikTok algorithm stops supporting it, it's gone.
Yeah.
But you know what, while it's here, the song, from the movie, and I know the one you're all thinking of, the song about Dennis the Wolf, and you'd be right. That is the prime, musical experience in the movie, but there was a distant second about Lava Chicken that also got kind of popular. And it has now been added to the actual Minecraft game. So it drops as a music disc, I guess, which is a thing in Minecraft, I guess, where, you know, you can play a tune, and you can now get Lava Chicken, to play using its own music disc.
Okay.
The way you get it is kind of funny. It drops off of a chicken jockey mob.
Okay.
So that fits very well with the oeuvre of the Minecraft movie, and is a fun little discoverable. Lest you're worried that it is going to be like Jack Black straight up singing in Minecraft, it is a chiptune version.
Okay.
Which actually slaps. Like, you know, it's any chiptune thing done well is fun.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have that in the game. So kudos to them for doing something fun. Yeah, who knows how much longer it will be in the public consciousness.
Yeah.
But it is now immortalized in the Minecraft music disc, which honestly we should be using as our medium of record.
Yes.
For all audio. In fact, the Level podcast will now be released via Minecraft music disc.
Yeah, it's going to be terrible. It's gonna be the pits.
Well, it only does chiptune, so we'll have to figure out how that translates to voice.
Right, it'll just be us in the double dribble voice from the NES like voice chip thing. Yeah,
you ever fall asleep listening to a podcast? It's kind of like that.
This is not related to the story, but fuck Jack Black. I had no time for him ever since he left KG out to dry.
Oh yeah,
what happened?
Oh, go ahead, Ben.
He made a joke about the guy who tried to assassinate Trump should have been a better shot, like that sort of thing. And then,
yeah, it was basically a year ago as of recording. It was the night after the assassination attempt, and it was Kyle Gass's birthday, and they brought out a cake and hey, blow out the candle here, and he asked like, hey, what's your wish? And Kyle Gass said, next time don't miss, and people cheered.
Remember this now. I assumed that was like Jack Black distancing himself was like a meta bit and didn't pay any more attention.
They canceled the tour, and there's not been any like basically nothing. And it's like, you are nothing. You did not get where you are without Kyle Gass, sir. Like you left your homie out to dry. Good Lord.
I mean, he wrote an entire song enticing Satan to fuck KG instead of him. So, we should have seen it coming.
I mean, I
read the situation as him being like, hey, I got these $1 billion movies come out. I got to lay low for the next year. Let's just do a season, or let's do a tour like next year and we'll regroup. Yeah. I assume that that's like what's happening, but
yeah
that's kind of where my head was at, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as it's I know, just there hasn't been anymore. Winchester
until this all blows over.
Yeah. Or stand by your convictions and say, fucking, how about you recast me, Nintendo? What of it? Like,
yeah,
he just didn't want to have that Mario. He wanted to voice a dragon turtle. Fuck him.
Or be like, why is there that much outrage over that statement anyway?
So. Yeah. Oh God. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button this bad boy.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 550. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you want to help out this show and the network, you can spread the word. We do not advertise. We just have word of mouth. So do that. Leave ratings or reviews. Support us on Patreon. All of that makes a big difference for us. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Not at all.
Okay. I like to do this occasionally. Big thanks to our producer, Gwen, who edits and puts these episodes out. Thank you so much, Gwen.
Thanks, Gwen.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I have been K Ross. You can find me at K.zone on Blue Sky.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I am Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got titles for me?
Got two.
Okay.
There was a line earlier on, and I was like, ooh, I got to write that down. And then I didn't get out my phone until the next title and was like, oh, what was that first title? So I'll be listening for what other people say. There might be a late entry here.
Okay.
But I have What's an Order of Magnitude Among Friends.
Okay.
A little bit long. But, and then I also have an underwater game.
Okay.
Because I very much appreciated that dad joke.
Okay. I don't have anything. So, Moxie, have you got any?
I have Skaters Are Basically Sharks and Tony Hawk the Roguelike. Not sure about that second one.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I got nothing.
I like an underwater game.
I support it.
Take it.
Okay. It is decided.